Welcome to Leap to Faith with your host, Michael Olson. Leap to Faith is brought to you by Thrivent for Lutherans, the churches of the Monterey Bay Area Lutheran Conference, and by listeners just like you. You're invited to experience the gospel lesson being discussed on today's show in Sunday's worship service. For a Lutheran church near you, log on to leaptofaith.org. And now, Leap to Faith.
This is Leap to Faith. I am Michael Olson. Hope all you out there on the roads are doing well. We understand there's a lot of traffic accidents and road closures out there. So if you are in one of those closures, or if you're sitting beside the road with a bent fender, just relax, take a deep breath, and stay cool so we can all enjoy a nice tomorrow. This is Leap to Faith. Is a service of the Lutheran Churches of the Monterey Bay Area. Every Friday evening at 7 o'clock, we sit down and pull out the gospel lesson for Sunday's church service. And this is the same gospel lesson that most Christian churches throughout the area, the Catholics, the Episcopalians, and so on, all get together, and we kind of use the same gospel lesson, and it kind of tracks the church year as it goes from the Christmas season all the way through the year. And this past Wednesday, we had a significant turning of the corner of the church here. Here to help us work that out, we have Pastor Stan Abraham from Mount Calvary Lutheran Church, and also from
Good Shepherd Lutheran
in Watsonville. Good. And also, we have Pastor Jim Sorensen coming in under the radar in the weather tonight. He's still on the road, but he is working his way here, so we expect to have him on the air in just a few minutes. So, Wednesday, what happened to us? Stan?
On Wednesday. That was Ash Wednesday. It's the first day of Lent. And it's a day of, in the church year at least, it's the most solemn or somber of the church days.
You're not supposed to smile in church.
Well,
on Ash Wednesday.
I don't know if it's that so much, but it is a reminder to us on that day. We imposed ashes on the foreheads of the mm-hmm. people and said, you know, remember that you are dust and to dust you shall return. So it's a day on which we remember our mortality and the reason for that mortality, the sin that has been a part of all of our lives and is and continues to be a part of the world. And so there is, in understanding our relationship to God, there is a need for a penitential time. And so Lent is the penitential prelude through Good Friday to Easter Sunday.
Mm-hmm. So the death before the life, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's kind of interesting, the 40 days of Lent, people are surprised because I give up certain things during the Lenten season, and one of them is alcohol. I enjoy having a beer now and then, but Sundays are not included in those 40 days.
Oh, nobody told me that.
Yeah, that's what a lot of people tell me, too. They say, you're just trying to get around it. But if you count on a calendar, in order to get 40 days from Ash Wednesday to Easter, you have to exclude the Sundays. And the reason for that is because Sundays are always a festival of the resurrection, always a feast day, never a fast day. So Sundays are not included in the Lenten discipline, at least in terms of giving things up.
So then you can have a glass of beer on Sunday.
A glass of wine, yeah, sure.
Well, good. Well, you know, we've been tracking our way through the seasons. We've been started with the Christmas cycle, of course, the Christmas season. Then we went into the Epiphany season, and Epiphany is the season in which Jesus is made known as the Son of God in the gospel lessons. And now we go into the Easter cycle, and of course, the first part of the Easter cycle is Lent. And we were talking about, Lent starts off with a very, very solemn ritual in which the ashes are placed on our heads, and it truly is a solemn
realization, you know, that to have somebody put ashes on your forehead and say, from ashes you came and from to ashes you will go. And it really is a solemn reminder that we are human and that we are going to be we're all going to lose our lives.
Yeah, there comes the time. Comes the time of our dying. It's true for every one of us, as it was true for Christ also. And Lent is the time that we also think of our baptism, because when Paul talks about it in Romans 6, for example, he talks about being buried into, you know, dying with Christ, being buried with Him, and then rising with Him. And so, and in the the church, in the early church, Lent was, and during the Middle Ages, Lent was a time of preparation for catechumens. And in the very early church, it lasted more than a year. Not the season of Lent, but the period. Lent became a time in which one began practicing one's faith in preparation for baptism, so that you had the instruction and then you had the practical kind of mm-hmm. side to it. So
that must have been quite a development in the church then, because at the time of Jesus, didn't seem to be any great preparation. I mean, Jesus showed up at the river and John baptized him, and that was that.
Right. And of course, the Christian baptism has a different character to it than the baptism that Jesus underwent with John the Baptizer.
So let's go to our gospel lesson for this evening. We're looking at, again, the book of Matthew. And Matthew was whom in day-to-day life?
Matthew was one of Jesus' disciples, sometimes thought to also be Levi. The Gospels, when they were written originally, did not have the names of the authors or thought to be authors with them. That's a little bit later tradition.
Oh, really?
But the tradition of the Gospel of Matthew is that it was written by Matthew as also Levi, two and the same people. And so he was one of the disciples. Luke and Mark and Luke, of course, were not disciples. John was, and John the Evangelist.
And Matthew, when Jesus selected him to be a disciple, he was a tax collector.
Yes, right. Right, that's correct.
So Jesus had a way of picking the most interesting people around, I guess.
Jesus picked a whole slew of interesting people.
So folks, this gospel lesson is from the book of Matthew, chapter 4, verses 1 to 11. And when I read it, I'm certain that you will remember hearing it or hearing this story. Then Jesus was led by the Spirit into the desert to be tempted by the devil. He fasted for 40 days and 40 nights, and afterwards he was hungry. The tempter approached him and said to him, "If you are the Son of God, command that these stones become loaves of bread." He said in reply, "It is written, 'One does not live by bread alone, but by every word that comes forth from the mouth of God.'" Then the devil took him to the holy city and made him stand on the parapet of the temple and said to him, "If you are the Son of God, throw yourself down, for it is written, 'He will command his angels concerning you. With their hands they will support you, lest you dash your foot upon a stone.'" Jesus answered him, "Again it is written, 'You shall not put the Lord your God to the test.'" Then the devil took him up to a very high mountain and showed him all the kingdoms of the world in their magnificence. And he said to him, "All these I shall give to you if you prostrate yourself and worship me." At this, Jesus said to him, "Get away, Satan. It is written, 'The Lord your God shall you worship, and him alone shall you serve.'" Then the devil left him, and behold, angels came and ministered to him. So there it is, his 40 days and 40 nights of fasting in the desert. And we finally made it, Pastor Jim. It was like 40 days and 40 nights getting here on the freeway tonight, right?
Just about. It was an accident in the two-lane section between Moss Landing and Watsonville there.
Yes.
And somebody was hurt. I hope not badly.
Oh, goodness.
But it held up traffic for a long time.
Yeah, and Highway 17 was closed in both directions to another accident. So it's tough out there on the road, folks. So slow down a little bit this evening and turn up your radio and relax and listen as we talk about a time in the wilderness and a significant time it was. So Stan brought up a question with respect to this verse, and he said we should ask something like this. Do you doubt that God has good intentions for you? What do you think? We invite you to participate with us tonight. The phone numbers are 831-479-1080 and 477-1340. You do not have to be a Lutheran, of course, to participate in this conversation. The issues raised, I believe, affect everybody, regardless of religion. And the point of view put forth here is a very interesting one, and one that has survived for 2,000 years. So the ultimate question, of course, that we're going to ask tonight is, what significance does this lesson hold for us today? Does it still hold any meaning for us after 2,000 years, even though that we're not living in the desert, we're not poor people living by the Sea of Galilee, even though we've come a long, long way, even though we've been to the moon, does this lesson still hold meaning for us? What do you think? 831-479-1080, 477-1340. We have Pastor Stan Abraham, Jim Sorensen, and yours truly, Michael Olson. So, welcome aboard, Jim. It's been a while. We've never worked together, have we?
Oh, I think we have.
We have?
Yeah, once or twice earlier on.
Okay, good. So, once or twice earlier on, that's right. So it's been some time now. What do you think? Does God have good intentions for us?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
And Jesus' testing in the wilderness is an example of God's good intentions to us.
Well, what about this 40 days and 40 nights? What is Matthew really trying to tell us here with respect to 40 days and 40 nights? It seems like one hears this 40 days and 40 nights other places in the Bible.
Certainly do. 40 is quite a round number in the Bible. Israel was 40 years wandering in the wilderness.
Mm-hmm. Moses was up on the mountain.
Moses was up on the mountaintop getting the Ten Commandments. He was up there for 40 days and 40 nights. The prophets, certain ones of the prophets fasted 40 days things like of that nature. Israel was 40 years in the wilderness. So the 40 days is quite significant. It ties Jesus testing and fasting in the wilderness with the experience of God's Old Testament people, mm-hmm, and provides a certain continuity and linkage.
Do you think Matthew is really trying to sell this to the Jewish people by tying it so closely to the Jewish traditions, Stan?
Well, one of the things that can be noted is that the Jewish people had expectations in terms of a Messiah, one who was to come, right, who would set up a kingdom.
And, as the scriptures had been foretelling, right?
Yeah. And so they had, you know, there were various expectations. Would it be a Moses-like figure? Would it be a Davidic king? And so on. So there were several different thoughts as to who this Messiah might be or what he might be like. But they were pretty much online when they looked at the signs that this person would do. He would do great signs, great wonders. He would feed. There would be endless manna, as Moses provided in the wilderness, and so on and so forth. So I think one of the things in reading this story is that Jesus is basically rejecting the popular notion of what this Messiah is going to be.
So he wasn't
He's not going to be the same kind that was expected.
Yeah, he isn't going to be the kind of Messiah that rides in on a white horse with a big sword.
Yeah.
And he's going, what kind of a Messiah is he going to be?
He's going to be the one that fulfills all righteousness and lives life as a real man who lives our life and dies our death on our behalf.
And that's a good transition, because this is the transition text. We are making a turn here. We are turning towards Jerusalem. We have had the season of Epiphany, in which Jesus is revealed to us as the Son of God, and now he's turning to Jerusalem. What does that mean?
Well, I think that that's picked up in, I mean, the notion of Jesus turning his face toward Jerusalem is picked up from the Transfiguration story in Luke's Gospel, and it's a pivotal point at which time, right after, and well, in Matthew's Gospel too, at least in this case, of following the first passion prediction of Christ, and where he says the Son of Man is going to go to Jerusalem and be put on trial, suffer, die, and on the third day rise. And in Matthew's Gospel, following that is, you know, if you want to be my disciple, take up your cross and follow me.
Right.
And, you know, whoever loses his life will save it, and so on. And so, so there comes that recognition in Jesus' own mind that there is a necessity to go to Jerusalem, which is the headquarters, you know, of sure. religious headquarters. And this is where the proclamation is going to be made, as was the as the prophets did. And the proclamation, in at least in some circles, the leadership circles anyway, of the religious folks, didn't want to hear the message.
And Jim?
The relationship of this story of testing and tempting in the wilderness has to do with some very profound points that come from way back in the Old Testament. In our worship, we have three lessons from the scriptures.
Right.
One of them from the Old Testament.
Old Testament. Mm-hmm.
And the Old Testament lesson to be read Sunday happens to be the account of the fall.
One of the oldest
Genesis
stories.
Genesis 3.
Right.
You know, how Adam and Eve are tempted in the Garden of Eden. The devil insinuates himself into them, and they partake of the forbidden fruit and lose their innocence and commit sin and are subject to death.
So
with this, so they're representing the entire human race. Jesus is tested, not in a garden, but in the wilderness by Satan. And he does not submit. He does not give in. He does it. He's like a second Adam, who recapitulates that sequence, but without falling.
Makes good.
Yes.
Makes good. Well, what do you think out there? Do you think there is a place in our lives today for temptation and resisting temptation? Do you think there is a place in our lives for fasting and for observing a tradition like Lent? Or do you think we should forget about those things and go about our merry way and have as much fun as we possibly can? Love to hear from you. We're at 831-479-1980 and 477-1340. This is Leap to Faith. I am Michael Olson with Pastors Stan Abraham and Jim Sorensen. And you do stay tuned. We will be right back after this with some more fun things about Lent.
You're tuned in to the Leap to Faith radio program. Leap to Faith is brought to you by Thrivent Financial for Lutherans, by the Churches of the Monterey Bay Area Lutheran Conference, and by listeners just like you. We cordially invite you to experience the gospel lesson being discussed in today's program in Sunday's worship service. One of the principles that Martin Luther championed was that scriptures and worship need to be in the language of the neighborhood. There are 17 neighborhood Lutheran churches in the Monterey Bay area, and some of them are in yours. For Lutheran churches near you, log on to our website at www.leaptofaith.org. If you'd like to make a donation to the Leap to Faith radio ministry, please send it to Leap to Faith, care of St. Stephen's Lutheran Church, 2500 Soquel, Santa Cruz, California, 95062. You can also make a donation by logging on to www.leaptofaith.org. Now let's go back to Leap to Faith.
Well, not quite yet. Leap to Faith is brought to you tonight by a grant from Mount Calvary Lutheran Church. Pastor Stanley Abraham, 2402 Cabrillo College Drive in Soquel, just off Park Avenue. Service at 10:15 Sunday morning. And now, back to Leap to Faith.
Mm-hmm. Welcome back, folks. This is Sleep to Faith. Michael Olson here with Pastor Stan Abraham from Trinity Lutheran in Watsonville and Mount Calvary Lutheran in Soquel, and Pastor Jim Sorensen from Our Savior in Salinas. And you, phone numbers today, to this evening, 831-479-1080, 477-1340. Hope you all of you out there on the roads are doing well and watching your P's and Q's. It's been tough on both sides of the bay and in the mountains and everywhere with this rain, so do stay cool, relax, take a big deep breath, and spend 1 minute more on that freeway tonight, and you might spend a lot more time on this earth. You know, just take it nice and easy out there. We're talking Lent, and we're talking the first gospel lesson of Lent from the book of Matthew, chapters verses 1 through 13. And we're talking, 1 to 11, Matthew 4, 1 to 11. And this, of course, is the story of Jesus in the desert and with temptations. Three temptations. Let's talk about the temptations. First temptation, of course, is that take care of your hunger. You're the Son of God. Take care of your hunger. Jim?
Yes. The devil says to him, if you are the Son of God, command these stones to become loaves of bread. What's wrong with that? He's hungry. He's been fasting. He needs to eat to support the body. How can he do his mission if he isn't?
What is wrong with that?
You know, well, it simply uses the divine power to deny his humanity.
So, and thus failed in his mission, right?
And thus he would fail in his mission. He said, it is written, man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that comes from the mouth of God. From Deuteronomy 8.
Mm-hmm. From Deuteronomy.
Mm-hmm.
Stan?
I'd like to think about this a little bit differently. In terms of, because I think when we talk about temptation and sin, we think about it in terms of, you know, doing or not doing. You know, there's a problem, you know, do I look at this movie? Do I tell this lie? Well, temptation is to somehow do something that's ethically or morally wrong. And I'd like to look at it, think about it a little differently, and even going back to the garden, where I think the comparison between Genesis and Matthew here,
the old
or the temptation
new
of Christ, is the question of doubting the goodness of God. That the real temptation is not in somehow missing the mark, you know, to you know, well, the real temptation is money, or the real temptation is power, or something like that, you know. But rather, one in which, for the snake, mm-hmm. That's how the Old Testament talks about that snake. Mm-hmm. They don't say anything about a devil in the Old Testament. The snake questions what God had said to Eve.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
kind of like a lawyer.
Well, yeah, raises the question.
Yeah.
So, did God really say this?
Did you really hear it that way?
Yeah. Did you hear it that way?
Implying that did he have your good in mind?
Well, because he's withholding something from you.
Mm-hmm.
So he's withholding.
Would God really keep this apple from you?
Oh yeah, yeah. But the shift, there's a shift there in that account from the tree of life, which is in the middle of the garden, and she perceives the tree of the knowledge of good and evil to be in the garden. So there is a shift in her focus, and it's a shift that occurs in response to this question of what is it did God really say to you? And I think that the story then tries to say, at least Luther, the way he looks at this, he says, you know, that it's a question of God's goodness and good intent because God is withholding something. And therefore, God is suspicious, and I think that's what's going on here. So, in the account with Matthew, that Jesus, it follows immediately upon Jesus' baptism, and he hears the mm-hmm. word, "You are my son, the beloved one." And then the Satan here says, "Did you hear that right? If you are the Son of God, are you sure now? And if that's the case, evaluate your circumstances, Jesus. Look where you are. You're out in the wilderness. You don't have any food. There's nobody around. You're alone. What kind of a father really has a relationship with a son like that? Are you sure you're, you know, God has good intention for you? And so I think that for the baptized people of God reading this in Matthew's day, and for the Christian people reading it today, immediately after baptism, where are we placed? And are we in a world in which we, those things, are we in a world in which we question the goodness of God? Because the evidence all around us suggests that God doesn't have our well-being in mind.
Very good insight, Stan. I appreciate that. It's very good. Okay.
A little stage direction there. That's what radio people do when they want you to get closer to the microphone.
Okay. Sorry about that. And I think it's very fruitful to see that or to layer that into the perception of this mission, because you can see that in each one of these temptations. Where's the bread? Where's the food? Does God really care about me enough to provide bread? Will I be able to eat? How am I going to live? And so on. And very fruitful.
Let's go to Pete, who's got a comment about fasting. Folks, the phone number today, this evening, is 831-479-1980, 477-1340. Leap to Faith here with Michael Olson and Pastor Stan Abraham and Pastor Jim Sorensen. We've got Pete on the line. Pete, welcome to Leap to Faith.
Thank you, Michael. And it's a great show you guys got.
Well, thank you.
And Pastor Abraham, I kind of have a question for you about if Jesus fasted for 40 days, why shouldn't we? And the second part of the question is, what do we benefit from fasting?
Those are great questions.
Yeah, good questions, Pete.
Great questions. Yeah. Wait a minute. Pete, do you fast? Are you giving up something for Lent?
Actually, I do, and I haven't really made it past 14 days.
Wow.
But, you know, it's just a beautiful world when you do. Mm-hmm. I mean, you see things so much clearer. But I would really like to hear the pastor's comments on it first before I explain my experiences.
Okay, wonderful. The first question is, should we not fast for 40 days like Jesus did, right?
Yes.
All right.
Yeah,
let's start with you.
I think if a person is able to do that, I think that can be very salutary. I don't know that the story of the temptation is saying because Jesus fasted, therefore we ought to fast. You know, the Spirit led him into the wilderness, and I suspect the Spirit leads us in various places at various times. Surely Jesus didn't object to fasting. In chapter 6 of Matthew, for example, he says, when you fast, don't look gloomy like the hypocrites, but when you fast, do it in secret. Suggesting that it may not be a public commodity, you know, the fasting, that it's an individual sort of thing. So I think people that are capable or able to fast, I think that can be a salutary thing.
Fasting is definitely in the Christian tradition, and occasional fasting, and in other religions too.
Yes,
the Muslims, of course, fast in their Ramadan during the daytime. Anyway, they don't fast at night. The medieval monks fasted on Wednesdays and Fridays.
Mm-hmm.
As well as during Lent, but they didn't completely fast.
Well, do we have to? Do you have to give up food?
I think
yes,
we do. Okay,
I think fasting is a particular gift for an individual, and that if that's the caller's particular gift, and if it tends to his spiritual benefit, more power to him.
So,
but what about fasting not only from food, but from the outside world.
That's also a possibility. I can mention a little bit of my Lenten discipline. I have, and it's not entirely fasting, but I have given up alcohol during Lent. I've given up eating second helpings and junk foods in between meals and things like that. I also, our congregation, our church, also has, during Lent, communion service every morning at 7 a.m., which is part of the my Lenten discipline. So in a sense, I'm fasting from sleeping in or fasting from getting up in the morning and just getting on my road. And I think all of those, to respond to your question, Pete, I think all of those call my attention to, number one, the sacrifice of Christ, and number two, it helped me focus on what it is that I'm doing in preparation as part of my penance, as part of my discipline, as I look toward Easter.
You know,
that's really nice, but I mean,
well, isn't it a form of fasting when you give up certain things but don't give up everything? I mean, do you have to give up everything to be fasting, Pete?
Yes.
Well, more power to you, Pete.
Well,
I think that's great if that's to your spiritual benefit.
No. Can I offer a little injection
here? Please do.
I mean, when you deny the body and you deny the personal ability of yourself and you deny this physical thing, which is just a waste in front of God, you let the spirit grow and you let your soul grow. I mean, when we sit here and we think, okay, I deny myself a second helping, and Pastor, I don't disrespect you, but deny the first helping. Let the spirit inside your heart grow.
What happens to you, Pete, when you do that?
You know, actually, I love to read the scriptures when I do it. And things that I was taught by people that this means this completely change. And it's just amazing the world that opens up and the life that opens up when you do that. I mean, it's so amazing. You look at a certain scripture and you realize that you're humanizing it. And the scriptures are not for humans. It's for spirit. And it's done in almost every religion there is, except our Christianity.
Well, good
and
point.
That's why Jesus was out in the wilderness, away from anything, away from any influence. And, you know, of course, you don't think he was hungry. He was hungry. He was either God or man. And if he was both, then he suffered like man, even in the wilderness.
Yeah,
absolutely.
That's what the scripture says, too. He was hungry.
I have a question, Pete, in terms of what you said. I don't remember the exact words, but I think you were referring to the body before God or in the presence of God, that it wasn't worth anything, or it was... How did you phrase that?
Well, it isn't, because our own righteousness is but filthy rags.
Right. I do think, however, I mean, I would think that Jesus, though, had a tremendous amount of concern for the physical well-being of people. I mean, given the whole slew of healings that he did,
sure.
And of course, he fed 5,000 folks who were hungry. So I don't know if the point of Jesus fasting in the wilderness was necessarily the point that all the folks should do that, and it's the only place that we have of that, and we don't have in the writings of Paul or other Christian people suggesting long-term fasting. Maybe some of the Desert Fathers, perhaps. But I'm wondering, I think the Spirit of God works in the hearts and lives of people in many different ways. Certainly fasting helps focus our attention, I think, on the spiritual aspect of our lives. I mean, I would agree with that.
Have you tried it?
Have I tried fasting?
Yes.
Yeah. It depends on what you mean by that. I mean, for 40 days?
A week.
No. I fasted for a day.
Why not?
I don't necessarily see a spiritual or salutary benefit to that, and I don't know.
Well, see, you're secularizing it.
Well, no, what I'm looking at, and I'm trying to say in terms of the scriptures, where do I see that as a command? See, I don't see that.
It's not a command.
Right.
It's, Jesus said, follow me.
Pete, that's a great comment. I've done a little bit of isolation at periods of time in my life, and just isolation, I guess, is a form of fasting too, because you're withdrawing.
Absolutely.
Withdrawing from all of those distractions of life. Tremendous experiences. Thank you so much for the call, Pete. Really appreciate
your
challenging us here tonight. God bless you. And when we get back from this quick break, we're going to go to Richard in Watsonville, who's got a comment about fasting and water. So do stay tuned. Folks, this is Leap to Faith. I am Michael Olson, Pastor Stan Abraham, Pastor Jim Sorensen, and you, 831-479-1080, 477-1340. Do you fast? Are you giving up something for Lent? Do you think you get more when you have less? What do you think? Give us a ring and let us know.
You're tuned in to the Leap to Faith radio program. Leap to Faith is brought to you by Thrivent Financial for Lutherans, by the Churches of the Monterey Bay Area Lutheran Conference, and by listeners just like you. We cordially invite you to experience the gospel lesson being discussed in today's program in Sunday's worship service. One of the principles that Martin Luther championed was that scriptures and worship need to be in the language of the neighborhood. There are 17 neighborhood Lutheran churches in the Monterey Bay area, and some of them are in yours. For Lutheran churches near you, log on to our website at www.leaptofaith.org. If you'd like to make a donation to the Leap to Faith radio ministry, please send it to Leap to Faith, care of St. Stephen's Lutheran Church, 2500 Soquel, Santa Cruz, California, 95062. You can also make a donation by logging on to www.leaptofaith.org. Now let's go back to Leap to Faith.
And Leap to Faith is brought to you tonight by a grant from Pastor Stanley Abraham of Mount Calvary Lutheran Church at 2402 Cabrillo College Drive in Soquel, just off of Park Avenue. Services every Sunday at 10:15. Now back to Leap to Faith.
Welcome back out there, Michael Olson. This is Leap to Faith. It is Friday evening, and it is a wet one out there, so I hope you're all driving safely and watching your P's and Q's on the highways tonight. We want to be safe. We want to be sound. And so just take a breath and go a little bit slower. Give yourself a little more room in front of behind that car in front of you, and let the car in back of you know that you want some space, too, and everybody keep cool that way. We're talking Matthew chapter 4, verses 1 to 11. This is the first Sunday in the Easter cycle, and the season is Lent, first Sunday in Lent. And traditionally, we take a little deeper breath and step back a little bit and examine ourselves and our lives. And one of the ways we do that is through giving things up, or like Pete, fasting and withdrawing from society and focusing more on yourself and your faith and whatnot. And we're going to go to Richard right now and talk a little bit about fasting and water. Richard, are you still there?
Yeah, Michael.
Hey, welcome to Leap to Faith, Richard.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I was listening to this and I thought, well, first of all, the pastor said there, or your guest said there, I'm not sure if it was the pastor or not, which one it was that said that Jesus wanted, he was more concerned about the well-being of all people. I don't think that's true.
Well, okay, let us have it.
The time that he ran into the temple and started turning over the money changers' tables and raising holy hell on that part of earth, I don't think he cared about the well-being of any of them rabbis in there.
Maybe he cared for them because he was pointing out that they were being very wicked
trouble,
and that they should mend their ways or something. Let's toss that to Pastor Jim. You want to address that one?
Yeah, I think the cleansing of the temple was an indication that Jesus cared for even those people who were sinning. He was pointing out to them the wrong of their ways and in no uncertain terms and no uncertain ways.
Mm-hmm. Well, they didn't look at it that way.
No, of course they didn't. And people who are corrected, who have their sins called to attention, frequently do not look at it that way. They think you're against them.
I come in there and do that to your church, you ain't going to appreciate it at all, are you?
I am not going to appreciate it at all, no.
But if I say I'm the Son of God, are you going to doubt me?
I will doubt you, yes.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
How will you know?
Well, I'll have a pretty good guess.
See, I mean, that's the problem we have here, because like...
But you're probably not going to find Pastor Jim changing money in his church, are you?
No, you're not going to find... changing money for special temple money and taking taking cut for myself out of it. You're not going to find me selling sacrificial animals at an inflated price.
Hey, wait a minute. You still eat hamburger on Fridays now or what?
I rarely eat hamburger at all.
Well, you eat meat?
Once in a while.
Well, I do, Richard.
I don't.
Okay.
I still keep up that tradition.
Why?
I don't know. Just an old habit?
Mm-hmm.
It's not even a... It's something that you would give up.
Yeah, giving up something. Giving up something for Lent or for some other spiritual purpose is a good thing.
Well, we're talking about fasting now.
Right. If you feel called upon to do that, by all means, do it.
Wait a minute. You can't do it.
Why not?
Unless you're going to define fasting for me. Because, like, people nowadays, when, you know, I'm fasting for civil something, I want something to happen, and I'm going to fast until I get my thing that I want happening. These people are still drinking liquids every so often.
Mm-hmm.
There's no such thing as a total fast anymore.
Well, you know, we were just on the break, we were just talking about, you know, Jesus in the wilderness, and I was wondering if a human body could survive 40 days without nourishment.
And 40 nights.
And 40 nights.
And what is with this number 40? I'm so sick of it. I mean, Noah,
yes,
40
Noah.
Days and 40 nights mm-hmm. of rain.
Moses
up on the mountain for 40 days and 40 nights.
It's a biblical round number.
Lost in the desert for 40 years.
Yeah. It's kind of like something costs $50 or $100 instead of $29.95 or something.
I mean,
like
if you go out there behind that rock, I got to take it for face value that you fasted for 40 days and 40 nights now.
Well, Richard, let me ask you this. All of that notwithstanding, do you think you get something by giving up something?
It doesn't matter, does it?
Sure.
Right.
Why would it matter? You give up something, you made a commitment to give that up. What does it matter whether it's good, bad, right, wrong?
I think I get something by giving things up.
Really? You get a kick out of it, or you get paid mm-hmm. for it, or what?
I get paid for it, yeah.
You believe, that's almost like that kung fu stuff, that yin-yang, what goes around, comes around kind of stuff. And is that what you're hoping for, or do you expect that?
No, I know what
something
comes.
Something good comes back to you because you did something like that.
I get a focus,
really?
I believe. Yes, I do.
But do you get fixated on that focus?
No.
So you're able to move on to other things.
Well, I have
to.
I live in this world.
The averages, so that if you do a whole bunch of good little samples out there, a couple of them may come back in a big way, huh?
One never knows. But I think what fasting does is brings focus. I don't know. What do you think, Stan?
Well, let me ask. Richard, are you married? Or do you have children or anything like that?
That ain't important, is it?
Well, I was thinking of it in terms of giving up.
Giving up, like, my family?
Well, no. I mean, we give up. I, for example, give up certain things for my family. And so I get things in return when that takes place. So I think the idea of giving up and receiving is something that is possible.
What could you possibly give up for your family that would return you something that would be more valuable than your family?
Oh, if you're talking about it in terms of something.
No, you're talking about it.
No. I mean,
let's say, for example, Pastor Stan gives up robbing banks for the sake of his family.
Well, he has to start it before he can give it up.
Okay.
Right?
Well, no.
But in giving
something up,
Richard,
huh?
Pastor Stan then is able to focus much more on his family, and that comes back later in life. With good kids and a good relationship with his wife.
Well, usually there's a parole officer and a little time in prison involved before you even get to see your family again. You know, I mean, that has absolutely nothing to do with God.
I once knew a man.
Jesus Christ.
Well, what I'm saying is that I think there can be
I want to know what you'll give up for your family.
I might give up some time, for example, of doing additional work.
How about your life?
Well, let me finish.
What's your life worth?
Well, let me finish before, okay? I might give up a certain amount of time that I'm going to spend at one thing, either work or, something around the house, go out and spend some time in conversation on the beach or something like that that would return or be beneficial to the family. So I think you can give things up. Now, I agree with you in what you said. That the family is going to be there, and the richness in the relationship is going to be there without doing that. But I think there's some salutary benefits to it. That's the only point that I was making. So that if we think about it in terms of spirituality or religious life, and think about it in terms for me anyway, I can give up something that helps me, that by giving that up, I think about what it is that's being given up, and therefore I can focus my attention on the reason for giving it up, which then comes back to the sacrifice or giving up of, Jesus, his life for us. I mean,
well, things that you just mentioned, though, are awful weak, I mean, when it gets down to life or death, Then we got something going there, but
which of course is what Lent is all about, isn't it?
Exactly it. That Jesus Christ gave up his whole life for you.
Exactly.
And for me.
And you too.
And that, and yes, it's for me.
Same thing for him.
And well, we should be ready to do that.
Wait a minute. You want to spread the word and go home and feel good about it.
Well,
you actually have a home to go home to.
Well, when the mullah raises his sword over your neck and says, give up Jesus and embrace Allah or die, happens?
Hey, man, at that point, I'm just hoping it's sharp and not a dull butter.
That's right.
Richard, thank you for calling and shaking our trees. Yeah, it's always fun to hear from you. Woo, okay. That would be a fun one. So let me ask you both this. We only have a couple minutes left, but what is Matthew trying to tell us, down through 2,000 years about this lesson of Jesus in the desert, fasting, as it were, and giving up and being tempted? What is Matthew trying to tell us?
Jesus relied utterly on his Father and relied utterly on the Word of God and committed himself fully to the will of his Father, trusted him completely, did not test him, try him. He was in complete accord with God.
Stan?
I think I would look at it from the baptismal side of Christians who are baptized also live in this world in which there are a lot of things that want to distract us from God and take us away from trusting in God completely. I think, if I were to relate that to Richard's last call, for example, the whole question of giving up one's whole life, that's a challenge and a difficulty it's difficult for us to think along those lines, especially in our society. Jesus calls his disciples, to give up themselves.
Put everything down. down.
Yeah. And that becomes a very, very difficult thing to do. So I think that then I'm reminded. I mean, I have to go back and remind myself that I'm a child of God. I've been called a child of God in Christ Jesus, and as a result of that, I live in this world doing what I can that is pleasing to God.
Let's pick up Roxanne really quickly here. Oops, I just pressed the wrong button and I lost Roxanne. Roxanne, that was my error. And you'll have to call back next Friday night at 7 o'clock, and I promise not to press the wrong button on you. Still hold true? Do we still give things up? Does that bring focus into our lives? What do you think, Jim?
I think if you are called on to do that, if you feel that that's a good thing for you to do, you should do it.
How are you going to preach on this verse Sunday?
I'm going to preach on this verse as Jesus Christ fulfilling God's righteousness, part of his fulfilling of the righteousness for us.
Stan?
Well, I haven't totally and completely formulated it. But
did Richard
right,
help
well,
you
I
out?
I haven't either.
Yeah.
Did Richard help
but,
you out?
It might be.
But I think one of the things that intrigued me about it was the trust that is mentioned in that text. Jesus, you know, is says man doesn't live by bread alone, but every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. And the tempter says, "Okay, here's a word from the mouth of God. Throw yourself down; his angels will watch over you."
But he misquotes it.
Well, be that as it may, it's a question of the trust. It's a question of the movement in the text from trust to say, "Okay, this is what trust really is." Now let's see what happens and what it is that we're called upon to do.
Roxanne, were you going to call back next week for us?
Well, I was, but there was something I wanted to say, and I thought if you weren't busy when you got off the air, maybe you could give me a call.
Okay, hold on.
Or can I just hold?
Hold on. We'll pick you up off the air.
Okay.
Folks, thank you so much for tuning in Leap to Faith. Michael Olson, what time's church, Pastor Stan?
At Trinity in Watsonville, it's 8:30. At Mount Calvary in Soquel, it's 10:15.
Leap to Faith.
8:30 and 10:30.
Our Savior in Salinas, thank you very much, folks.
You have been listening to Leap to Faith. Leap to Faith is brought to you by Thrivent Financial for Lutherans, by the Churches of the Monterey Bay Area Lutheran Conference, and by listeners just like you. If you'd like to make a donation to this radio ministry, please send it to Leap to Faith, care of St. Stephen's Lutheran Church, 2500 Soquel, Santa Cruz, California, 95062. You can also make a donation by logging on to leaptofaith.org. We cordially invite you to experience the gospel lesson discussed in today's program in Sunday's worship service. For a church near you, log on to our website at www.leaptofaith.org. Now let's go out and leap to faith.